makes sense.
Great morning, humans. Great morning, friends. Great morning, world. This is your boy, Dr. JC Dornick. Welcome to another edition of the Make Sense podcast with Dr. JC Dornick, aka The Dragon. Listen, this is a very exciting moment for me and a special episode because it represents a four-part series of my life's work. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a second. We're going to be sharing some information over the next four episodes with regards to something that I call the Interface Response System, and that is something that's coming right from my book, Make Sense, Solving the Mystery of Why Shit Happens. For those of you that have been following along the podcast thus far, we're going to start moving into a new realm where I'm going to teach you over the next four episodes this interface response system because it's a four-step process and it's going to be a deep dive. And then after that, you're going to start noticing that we're having the interviews come up. We've got some amazing interviews already recorded and teed up, some just fascinating discussions. By the time they come around, if you've been following along, and if you haven't been following along, I highly recommend that you do two things. Go back and start from the beginning so you can learn a lot of the language and concepts. I think in the past seven episodes, it'll help you, quote unquote, make sense of a lot of the interviews and interactions and discussions that I'm having with these folks, as well as future topics. We're going to be able to start deep diving into some really powerful shifts in thought and perception and things that are going on in the world, which will be a lot easier for you if you understand that information and the language. And the second part is I recommend that you integrate this into your morning structure, because while you're with me listening to this podcast, even if you're listening to it in like 10, 15 minute chunks, you're going to be focused consciously on some really cool thoughts that you can utilize to enhance your life experience that day rather than the bullshit that you might have woke up with and booted up. So today, we're going to make sense of something called brain awareness perception. The question is who is really in control of you and your thoughts, feelings, and actions? And this is going to represent, as I said, step one of what we call the interface response system, something that I created and made up in the past 52 years. Our mission in this episode is to direct your attention. That's a big statement right there. It's just to direct your attention. I'm not trying to persuade you and lead you somewhere. Just trying to offer you the opportunity to take note. Direct your attention to that wet piece of coiled up meat in your skull, aka the human brain. Why? It's crucial to embrace and understand how it works, to what degree that you have control over it, and what degree it controls you. An interesting question to ponder, in fact, right now is whether or not your brain even needs you to do its job. We're going to have some fun in that arena. Why is this important? Because for the most part, your brain is responsible for everything that occurs when we interface with life, from the onset of a perception of the interface to the end result of you responding to it. So by taking note and becoming aware of this wet piece of meat and all of its functions and why it does what it does and has a tendency to do without you, it's going to help you validate the importance of taking a pause and taking a few extra steps to dispute and think things through a little bit before you execute on forming something like an opinion or a response to things. Does that make sense? Welcome to step one of the four-step interface response system called perception. So allow me to give you a brief background, because we've never really done this, on what it is that I call the IRS, which is a really funny thing that came secondary to creating the name Interface Response System. I was like, that's IRS. You know, so it's the first time that you're going to have a relationship with the IRS in a positive light. To sum up my life story, I refer to it as one of moving from messed up to blessed up. So in my soon-to-be-published book, Make Sense, Solving the Mystery of Why Shit Happens, very excited about that. I offer a much more detailed and sequential description of various events that have transpired in my life that act as signs and insights. I go into that a lot about what signs and insights are. But if you could just give me the visual of going down the highway, signs, right, leading you somewhere, and then insights are what signs turn into when they're pivotal, that both led me and transformed me into this conscious or more conscious human being that I am today as I speak to you. So one led to the next. next. So these signs and insights acting as software upgrades to my operating system, placing me in more control of both my perception, my sense-making machine and perception of reality, and more importantly, my response system to the various events and stimuli that I came across daily. As we know, we don't control, we've talked about this in the episode called Sorting, we don't control the things that happen to us. We only control how we respond to them. This series of events that I went through proved to systematically empower me with specific tools to go 3 for 3, as I call it, in my daily interfacing with life and reality. So what do I mean by 3 for 3? Because this is what I've evolved into, and this is where you have the opportunity to go. When I say 3 for 3, I mean it helped me claim control as the dominant force in my life with my thoughts, feelings, and actions. So just imagine if you became the dominant force of your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Very, very complicated process. But once you arrive, you're going to be that dominant force and creator of your life. So rather than all those things, like most people, controlling me, rather than teaching people, however, to do the same thing over the next 52 years of their life, because that's how long it took me, I went to work and put a lot of time and effort creating a very, very simple, goof-proof 4-step process that anyone could put into play to achieve the same, to start learning how to be the follow-through you, the dominant force and creator of your life, the author, the director, the producer of your story, the main character, the winner, going 3 for 3. I can't really confirm where this quote came from, but quotes are things that I hear from somebody and I give them credit. So many humans relate to the famous quote frequently shared in my experience by the late great Wayne Dyer. And he said this, "If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change." Makes perfect sense. And I think a lot of people love that idea. Change the way I look at things, then the things that I look at change. However, this represents one of those doors that many people knock on, however few enter. It's hard to execute on this idea. Isn't that interesting? There's certain things in life that make perfect sense, but then we begin to get frustrated because we don't know how to execute on it. So the best way to explain the 4-step interface response system that we're going to start playing with is that it's a simple 4-step process to help you execute on that, changing the way that you look at things so the things that you look at change. Interesting? Let's go. So a very big part of my work in the creation with the interface response system surrounds the topic of something that I came across called brain awareness perception. What does that mean? Simply put, becoming aware of how the brain works, how it's come to work that way, and the fact that an estimated 95% of its functions are actually occurring subconsciously. What does that mean? Without you knowing. This represents the first and crucial step of the 4-step process called the interface response system. It's such a crucial step as it unveils and validates the very reason we would want to take the next step. So what I'm saying is a lot of people, when they learn those 4 steps, are going to get really excited about next week's episode, step 2, because it's fun and it very, very much makes sense. But what I'm saying here, and I'm hoping you're catching this, the only way that you will validate taking the second step and having it be effective is by understanding the first, and that is this brain awareness perception. Step 2 in the interface response system is where we're going to learn how to insert a pause on our programmed knee-jerk perception when interfacing with the various stimuli in our day-to-day. It's going to validate the reason why you would stop that. And if you don't have brain awareness perception and you don't understand how potentially crazy and faulty your knee-jerk reaction is, you'll never have the reason to put that pause on. Understand? Make sense? So people, events, smells, tastes, thoughts, feelings, etc. Those are things that are happening in our day-to-day. All things that we interface with using that sense-making machine, our brains and our 6 senses, by way of what we've been talking about, our virtual reality suits. That's how we interface, and that's happening all day long. We've learned that both the brain and our virtual reality suits have been fully programmed by our MFTPSE. That's your mother, father, teacher, preacher, and then society and evolution. Remember, what it is that we consume with regularity ends up being what we assume with regularity. However, there's good news. The good news is that this entire sense-making system is fully reprogrammable. And over time, we can consciously do the work, that's practice, as we said before, praction, and convert, transform, and evolve this automatic interface response system into one that better suits our goals, dreams, and desired state of reality. That's what it means to become the dominant force and reclaim control of your reality. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
The Make Sense podcast is sponsored by the Make Sense Academy, co-created by both myself, Mika, aka the chicken, and the dragon. The Make Sense Academy is a live interactive community where like-minded, solution-focused, curious seekers of expansion gather daily in a mastermind setting with both chicken and dragon, where they have access to premium content, online courses, and powerful collaboration and networking, all for $24 a month. The Make Sense Academy and its members are solely responsible for funding the Make Sense podcast. So feel free to reach out to us at www.riseupwithdragon.com and check out the Make Sense Academy, risk-free, with a money-back guarantee. Now, back to the Make Sense podcast.
The first step is to fully embrace the depths of this fascinating chunk of tissue, fluids, and caverns that sits as the only organ, interestingly enough, that is completely covered and protected by bone in the human body. Think about that. However you think we came into existence, God, universe, whatever, you get to decide, and I'm fine with it. Isn't it interesting how when the human body was created, that the only thing that was determined important enough to be completely encased and protected in bone was the brain? It just reminds us that we might want to take a little bit more time to have a look under the hood there and maybe work it a little bit. You know, one of my great friends and guest on our show, and just this guy, Jim Quick. Go check him out at quicklearning.com. Jim is just an amazing guy. He's got an amazing story of having a brain injury when he was younger and having to work twice as hard as all of us to work on his brain. So he's devised systems to help people with speed reading and memory, but it all comes from this place of him having to work harder to work on that muscle up in his cranial vault. So I love listening to him talk because nobody knows more about all of the things that we need to do or we can do to improve brain function, cognition, and things like this. You can see why he's so passionate about it. It's not as easy for us to take our brains seriously like he did when we learn his stuff unless you understand how miraculous the brain is. And that's why I like to point out that it's the only thing in your body the universe thought was important enough to protect completely with bone. Now you know that somehow operates as the most sophisticated computer operating system known to mankind, that is having, you know, what, 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day. And we've just opened up this idea that it's operating without us even knowing, and all of these intricate things happening in this piece of tissue. And here you are trying to focus on your goals today. It's not as easy as you thought, right? So in fact, if you're in this moment, this is how crazy the brain is. If you're in this moment right now trying to control your thoughts, that attempt to control your thoughts is coming from the same place, your brain, as those thoughts, and you're trying to control them. Make sense? So why am I sharing that? I just want you to know it's powerful beyond measure. And we haven't even begun to scratch the surface. When you're reading the book about the interface response system, you'll see that it's much more detailed and there's a lot more information about that. But the question is who's in control? Are you in control or is your brain in control? And that's the really important premise of step one, is to just become aware of the possibilities that you're a lot less relevant than you think. Have you ever had the experience where you thought you made a crystal clear decision to maybe go meet your friends at the bar and maybe have a drink, then go home to get some work done, like this was your plan, and get that quality sleep that you need, spend time with family so you can wake up the next day early and exercise and read that book that you want to read and fuel up and crush the day at work? Have you ever been in a situation like that where you went into a scenario and you had all these plans only to find out a day later, in reflection of what actually transpired, that an entirely different sequence of events unfolded? In reflection, you think, how'd that happen? The answer lies in your brain and its vast, vast powers that very often might be getting you in trouble, which is what we're trying to become aware of here. If you decide right now to stand up or sit down? I would guess that you can and you will. Yes? This idea is potentially a double-edged sword because the idea that you can say, I'm going to stand up and sit down right now, it actually creates an illusion that you're in fact in control of that sequence. We refer to this as agency, the idea of agency. And I've spoken about this before. A great person that speaks about agency is a psychiatrist, Paul Conte, studied at Harvard. And there's a great interview with him and Andrew Huberman. And I speak about it all the time because it's a great interview. So we refer to this idea of knowing that we can do something, that we possess the power to do something like stand up and sit down as agency, the acknowledgement of our power to execute tasks. According to Harvard PhD and psychologist, and I hope I don't screw this up, Mazarin Banaji, if there is a story for the brain to tell, we are quite wrong about this idea of agency. How much agency and control do we really have over our actions and perceptions? This is the question we have to answer right now in acknowledgement, in this awareness. Is it merely an illusion projected by that wet piece of meat in our brains? So what I'm saying right now is this idea that you have agency and control, stand up, sit down, listen to this podcast, stop it, pause it, share it with friends. The illusion would be that you're in control of that. But I'm going to share with you some information right now that might make you question whether or not that is true. So Yuri Moaz, PhD from Chapman University, is studying the perception of agency. So his studies lie in this idea that humans think that they control things. So he's studying this. This is fascinating stuff. This idea that we have agency and control our actions. Through various experiments, he exposes that the only control that we truly have over our actions. So this is referring to our brain's control over our actions and our involvement. Our only control is the volition to relinquish our control over to our self-running operating system. In other words, we make a conscious decision to trust our program sense-making and responding system, our automatic system, our autopilot, that 95% rest of the iceberg, we relinquish control over to it. He's saying that's the only thing that we actually have agency over is that we say, here, take over. It's in fact this voluntary decision to relinquish control to our program that gives us the illusion that we're in fact controlling our perceptions, actions, and responses, when in fact we're not. Our program is. So pause there for a second. Let's think about that. What he's saying is that we relinquish control over to our subconscious. I can tell you right now that your brain, for the most part, 95% of the day, is running on autopilot. We know from past experiences in the episode on program how it's been influenced from the outside in. But here we are saying, I'm going to just let this run for 95% of the day. And we forget about it. So the phenomenon of sleepwalking is a fascinating place to really appreciate the power of the human brain and also acknowledge this idea of relinquishing control over to it, and also ponder that idea I said in the beginning of, are we actually even needed in the equation for our brains to run? Because we just brought this idea up that we voluntarily give control over to our 95% subconscious brain, and it creates the illusion because we decided to do it. We just trust it and assume that it's going to run well that day, that we're in control. That's a fascinating way to look at it, is I think I'm in control of my life because I decided to let my program run that day, but it could be highly faulty, right? While most people spend approximately one-third of their lives sleeping, with the notion that our brains go offline to rest and rejuvenate, others miraculously get up. We're talking about sleepwalkers now. Others miraculously get up, walk to the kitchen, make something to eat, or do something strange, like take the cereal box and pour it out and drink dishwasher soap and pour milk over their heads, whatever, then somehow make it back to bed. So think about all those motor skills going on. When they wake up and find that box of cereal all over the floor, or the car door open and the car's running, which is really scary, they can't for the life of them understand or comprehend how any of it happened. So what's interesting here to acknowledge is the immense complexity involved in something as mundane as walking. Think about how many functions are involved in walking and keeping balance. Here's a good way to look at it. The smartest robotic engineers have spent the greater portion of their lives using the most advanced technologies trying to duplicate walking, just look at walking alone. Forget about the soap and the milk and the cereal. Trying to duplicate walking in robots, you can do it while you're completely unconscious and unaware. Have you ever thought about that? Looking at sleepwalking is funny and it's a phenomenon. Acknowledging the fact that your brain has the ability to take on a massive variety of tasks and execute it pretty well to the point where you go downstairs and go outside and come back and get back in your bed without you knowing it, you're not involved in that. Why is that important? That thing that has that power, that's probably creating the illusion that you're in control right now. It's happening right in your brain. One aspect of that might scare the shit out of you, but the other aspect of it, and that's what I'm hoping in phase one of the interface response system, might make you say, I might want to think about things first. I might want to try to grab that 5% of consciousness and access it rather than just let this thing do it. It's like, I almost want you to dispute and not necessarily hand over the keys of trust to your brain. That's what I'm looking to do in phase one. At the Icon School of Medicine Sleep Center in Mount Sinai, a guy named Emmanuel During shares that when sleepwalking, the voluntary, conscious decision-making parts of your brain, like the prefrontal cortex, remain asleep or offline while sleepwalking. Here's what that means. The parts of your brain, there's only a couple of parts of your brain that are involved in conscious, awake decision-making. So he's saying the prefrontal cortex, which is very much, and this is a whole other concept, influence. You'll read this in the book. Most of our actions are happening before we even know that they're happening. And there's another illusion that your prefrontal cortex or your conscious mind has this decision-making power. Technically it does, but it's already been influenced by your stress response system and things like that. This stuff that's happening on autopilot, it's not really making decisions. It's being coaxed into making decisions. But what he's saying, this guy, Emmanuel During, he's saying that while you're sleepwalking, they take note because they study this, that those parts of your brain, your conscious parts of your brain, are offline. They're not functioning. There's no activity. So that means that they're null and void in all of those activities. That's why you don't remember it. So just like they were when you were sleeping. While at the same time, those subconscious areas, like the areas that control motor function, you know, vision, language, eating, drinking, swallowing, and things like balance, when we were talking about walking, are completely online. So while we're sleepwalking, the observation and the studies show that all of the involuntary subconscious, the 95% stuff, are self-sufficient without you being there. You're not part of the equation at all. That's why you don't remember. Why is this important to recognize, especially in phase one? It reminds us that our brains can do almost everything required to get through a day without us. By us, I mean that 5% part of your brain that represents you, your conscious mind, your consciousness. It's an interesting way to look at us. You don't know who you are unless you're conscious of it. Sleepwalking is a great example of it. So when we take note that that subconscious mind represents that 95% of our decision-making process each day, it's not just controlling and coordinating the multitude of functions of the organs and the nervous system. It's also in control of things like perception and decision-making processes. You have an interface response system running right now, your sense-making machine, your brain, and your virtual reality system. That's your sense-making machine, and it is running on autopilot as your current interface response system. And it's also handling things like decision-making and perception for 95% of the things that you're interfacing with each day. Why is that important to notice? Because what we're trying to do here is make you aware of this process, not make you scared, but just make you aware that you've been handing the keys to this system that's quite faulty because of the way it's been programmed, and you're allowing it to run 95% of the day and make all the decisions without you even knowing it. We don't know that we've done something until we've done it. I'm trying to show you and give you reason to validate checking that, disputing that. That's step one of the interface response system. It'll happen on autopilot once you understand it, but I'm just trying to give you reason right now to look under the hood. And when I say look under the hood, I'm not saying look at your brain. I'm saying be aware of the brain and how it works and look at the things that it's telling you to do, dispute them. That's what we're going to learn how to do in step two. Taking this moment to recall the earlier episode that I've referred to called The Program, another episode in the first seven, where we recognize that this automatic or autonomous supercomputer in our skull is fully programmable, and it has been hardwired in support of the programming that we've received from our mother, father, teacher, preacher, society, and evolution. This includes all of those formative years that we've spoke about before, where your undeveloped brain was consuming all of the lessons from your mother, father, teacher, and preacher, as well as the constant deluge, more so now than ever, of all we consume each day in society through live interactions, TV, and social media. We're consuming that all day, programming our brain. Then throw in the fact that the powerful forces of evolution and things like natural selection have been paid forward, without you knowing it, paid forward as part of that programming that your 95% unconscious doesn't need you to run brain, paid forward to us from our ancestors. And you are frustrated when you cheat on your diet or put your foot in your mouth and say something that is inappropriate? Well, of course you're doing those things. But the question is are you involved in doing those things? That's why that wonderful saying is so powerful. And this is, you know, one of the things that I very often pull out when I'm pissed off at somebody. We forgive others for they know not what they do. And it's true. And it's true. It doesn't make things okay. It's true. This is an interesting topic that I get into as a parent with my wife very often. When my daughter or one of my boys does something inappropriate or disrespects her, I'm automatically now, because I've been doing this work for so long, looking at a bigger picture and saying, I don't think that they meant any harm by that. As you guys know, it doesn't work in the home, but it's true. We don't know what we're doing. And we're broaching this idea that we don't even need to be involved. Our brain doesn't need us. If we want to be effective and move into the fast lane towards our goals and dreams and learn how to have a more efficient, control-based life, then we have to take a look at this stuff. As we look to reclaim control of our reality with the hopes and intentions of a better outcome and a more fulfilled life experience, we must focus our attention and efforts on the only thing that we can control when we're interfacing with the realities of life. Once again, not the things that happen. We only control our responses. Therefore, the first step of the interface response system is called perception. It's the voluntary conscious observation that this self-running, pre-programmed, perception-creating, sense and decision-making machine is running as we speak, with or without you. Just like the sleepwalker, your subconscious programmed mind will do just fine without you. This voluntary observation of the inner workings and the reactive nature of the brain is what Dr. Bruce Perry, American psychiatrist and co-author of a great book he wrote with Oprah Winfrey called What Happened to Us, calls brain awareness perception. I've always known about this, and I used to refer to it as program awareness perception and sense-making awareness perception, meaning being aware of those things. But I never heard anybody put it into terms of brain awareness perception. So I want to give credit to Dr. Bruce Perry. When he said brain awareness perception, I said, that makes perfect sense. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Add to this the sense-making and program awareness perception, the acknowledgement of how those things are always taking place. So very often when we're in an unconscious sleepwalking state, we forget about those. And you can understand why the Bible teaches us to forgive others, for they know not what they do. So the first step is about recognizing all of this and validating the idea of placing a pause, of disputation, a challenge on that knee-jerk response system that is coming from that self-running automatic brain, and making an attempt to place your conscious mind online, from offline to online. Remember, when we're unconscious and subconscious and we're like the sleepwalker, we're offline. The idea of step two, as you'll see, is we're going to place a pause on this and we're going to step into this space of moving from offline to online. That's a conscious, voluntary decision. And the reason why we're going to do that is so that we can make a logical and rational assessment of the situation before deciding the appropriate response. Make sense? Well, I'd assume and say right now that you'd say yes. It does make sense. It's easy because you're in the jacuzzi experience of this conversation. And I hope that my way of explaining this episode is vibing with you and you're making distinctions and saying, holy shit, this is happening in my brain. I might want to take a look under the hood, void of the realities that await you outside when you go and re-engage back with the interfacement. We're probably accessing some conscious time because I'm making you think. You're more in the 5% right now than the 95%. But the 95%, your program, it's coming. It's like, get the fuck out of this podcast. Let's get back to the regularly scheduled program. However, what we do when we go back out there and back to running that regularly scheduled program It's a choice. And it takes work to perform this first step. Remember, it's voluntary, meaning you have to decide right now. Well, I shouldn't say that. You don't have to do anything. But should you want to do this work and claim control as that dominant force and creator and writer of your own story and reality bender, then you would have to begin taking note of something that you've, for the most part, placed 100% of your trust in for so many years. In order to take this potentially scary yet life-changing step, we need to develop a reason to do so. So I just want to take a couple moments here and explain how important it is for you to have a reason. It's crucial, before we go any further, that we recognize that the primary kink in your garden hose of potential that prevents you from identifying something like this that can help improve your current reality, such as voluntarily practicing brain awareness perception and actually doing it, is this. You must first come up with a reason on your own to do it, not base it on someone like me encouraging you to. When you learn my story in my book, you're going to quickly see that I developed what Martin Luther King called in one of his famous I Have a Dream speeches, the fierce urgency of now, to take radical action on these things due to my great desire to survive during really, really tough times. So I was forced into doing this. But you might be listening to this right now and saying, hey, this seems like a good idea. Thanks, Dragon. Even though I'm basically going to pass over the keys to you right now to drive your own interface response system, this must be something that you determine valuable on your own. So I just want to end by just reminding you of something really important. In one of the classic experiments known as the self-determination theory experiment, Desi and Ryan conducted this amazing study where participants were asked to solve puzzles while either being paid or not paid for their performance. They found that participants who were intrinsically motivated to solve the puzzles, meaning they found the activity inherently interesting and enjoyable, exhibited higher levels of motivation, persistence, and follow-through compared to those who were extrinsically motivated by things like monetary rewards. Make sense? So basically what that's saying is the people that were intrinsically motivated, not stimulated from the outside in to solve the puzzles, had better results, better follow through, better engagement, better sustained engagement, motivation, and all of those things than the people that were extrinsically motivated, which is very much going against what a lot of society showing us. Therefore, as we close this first crucial step of the IRS, that will be the launch pad, fertile ground, and catalyst for all things to come in the next three episodes, I recommend that you take this moment right now. In fact, take several moments to consider the massive potential upgrade and improvement that will transpire if you learned to change the way you look at things and naturally trigger things to change. What would it look like for you in the future if you learned to look at multiple sides of what you interface with, whether it be considering whether things matter or not, becoming capable of quickly identifying which things you control versus which things you do not, or perhaps becoming a highly skilled bouncer, protecting the doorway to your mind, filtering out the things that get in and those that should not, reducing lost time due to distraction, procrastination, and learning how to rebound back from falling below the line of your responsibilities in your life faster. I'll tell you what it would be like. It would be better. To what degree? That will unveil itself as you go. However, unequivocally better. So look at your current reality. Are you satisfied with the way things are? What do you want more of and less of in your life? What's your 5-year, 10-year, 20-year forecast, should you be so lucky? Is the structure and vehicle you are currently in fit to take you where you want to go? Or are you trying to get into town in a rocking chair? Are you trying to build an airplane in the sky? Are you wasting time trying to teach that goldfish to climb a tree? If you're dissatisfied with being okay, and you're interested in better or much better, or even awesome things transpiring in your life, then you have validated and have a reason to implement this first step of brain awareness perception and the steps that will follow in the next three episodes. Wishing you great success in your decision making today. With love, Dragon. Have a great day.
Makes sense.